Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
What is up? It is Inside the Clubhouse on baseball's final weekend. I am Ryan McGuffey, alongside the great Bruce Levine. We have plenty to discuss here on the show today. The White Sox, they did it. They finally did it. They broke Major League Baseball's all-time loss record last night with a 4-1 defeat to the Detroit Tigers, who clinched a playoff berth for the first time in 10 years. So not only did the White Sox finish with the most loss, or not finish, but clinched the most losses in the history of Major League Baseball. They had to watch the Tigers celebrate right in front of them. The Cubs had an hour and 48 treat from Jameson Taillon, who's just been fantastic for the Cubs this year. As they finish up the season, they've guaranteed themselves a winning record. Bruce, good to see you. Good to hear you. It has been a very disappointing baseball season on both sides of town, my friend.
Ryan, is it Detroit or Detroit?
I'm going to say Detroit. I'm a Detroit guy.
I've heard a lot of Detroit over the years, and I'm wondering if that's indigenous to the Michigan area. Is it? Is that? Well, as I digress, I'm trying to avoid talking about the White Sox tragic number of 121. And again, this is and has been, you know, the worst season by far for the Chicago White Sox. And the fans have come up more often than ever this year because of the fact that Chicago White Sox fans have had to deal with this. And I think it really puts it in perspective, Ryan, you know, all that we heard last week there, all the negativity, fans being so confused as to whether to cheer or boo for their own team. That's probably the first time in all my decades covering baseball where I was listening and watching a fan base confused as to whether to cheer or boo their team when they scored runs or when the opposition scored runs so that the record would take place. It is a it's a mind-boggling situation, one that you would hope had never happened or would never happen. Yet here we are sitting at 121 losses for the White Sox.
Yeah, it was. I was out there for the three-game series as well, covering it for NBC Sports Chicago, and we'd like to hear your thoughts at 312-644-6767 because, you know, Tuesday was definitely the weirdest of the three games. You had a team that was 0-94 when trailing after seven innings, and then all of a sudden come up with three runs in the eighth to kind of come out of nowhere and win a game, and it was confusing. There was a great energy in the stadium, I thought, all three games, including Thursday's day game. And Thursday's crowd, Bruce, a lot different, very celebratory, yeah. A big seven-run inning, very almost like that last crowd of the year, thankful type situation. And I felt like the crowd really trended towards that after Tuesday. Tuesday was just the ultimate weird situation with that three-run eighth, and I'm with you. I mean, I took a look at the players walking off the field after high-fiving, and they were kind of looking back at the fans. Did you notice that? They were kind of like,
yeah.
Are there Angels fans here, or are they really booing? It was an odd situation.
You know, tastes great, less filling. You know, the whole 3 days I was going, it is both.
It is both.
You know, it's just like you're cheering for them, you're cheering against them. I felt the fans' pain, and I have all year long because you and I are lucky enough to work in the media and be the conduit sometimes for fans and their information. And when I say luck, you know, I couldn't do anything else very well other than report and talk about sports and baseball. So I'm lucky to have made a living this way for 40 plus years. But the reality of sitting there watching a confused fan base in pain was just so evident all year long, and in particular the last three games. And if you were there, give us a call, 312-644-6767. Again, the honestly, the crowd on Thursday was a day game. So, yeah. Ryan, was there just less drinking? Was there, you know, was there, were people less frustrated by the time they had their second or third beer by the seventh or eighth inning? I don't know, you know. I mean, I do tip my hat to those fans that came out because, as you said, these are passionate White Sox fans. They don't know where to go with their dislike for this. It's easy to go to Jerry Reinsdorf and say, you have created this. This is your mess. We blame you. I understand that. I don't blame anybody for saying that if that's what they want. Getting out of this mess, moving forward, is more of a concern, I think, for White Sox fans as they look toward 2025.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there because, you know, I do feel for the players that had to wear this all year. And some people are going to be like, well, you know, it's the players are the reason. Well, this is a top-down situation. This is not just on. The players are going to be talked about for the rest of their lives now as the, you know, the 1962 Mets take a back seat to the 2024 Chicago White Sox. Let's hear from manager Grady Sizemore, who will be a guest on this show at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. Grady Sizemore on his message to the team after the 121st loss last night to the Detroit Tigers.
Does the message need to even be said, you know, you lose 121 while they celebrate? Isn't that like just like the lesson of the what we want in the future here? We want to be what they have.
I mean, obviously every year you come in, you know, with the expectation of making it to the postseason. I try not to relate our season to theirs in any way, but, you know, obviously, you know, it hasn't been our year. And you know, it's frustrating, you know, but we've been, you know, talking the last couple of months just really about what the focus is and not getting too caught up on the record itself and just trying to finish strong, you know, and build for next year and try to develop and just be a better team.
I mean, Grady Sizemore has been put in a weird position, too. You know, he's had to answer all of these questions. There was a national media contingent, the largest media contingent of the year, at the ballpark this week. So he's been having to wear this, you know, fairly or unfairly as well, Bruce. But I think there has been a different – it's a different clubhouse, and I want to talk about that with him later in the show. But the way that players have responded to him, and albeit they may finish with 123 losses when it's all said and done, they have – looked like at least a different team that haven't packed it in. That, you know, they look like they care. They look like they're certainly playing for a guy like this, but no one wants to hear the feel good stories on this.
I think Grady's done a very good job, but isn't it like the substitute teacher just being there?
Yep,
I mean,
100%.
Again, you're not Pedro. You're not the guy that was brought in to win 2 years ago and see the record fail miserably, losing 100 games last year. You're not the guy that was on sitting on top of the dunk tank every day in 2024 and basically going in and really not being able to verbalize in a way that people could relate to because of the fact that he was so humiliated by the whole situation and, to be honest, wasn't brought in to run a team that was in player development. He was brought in to help a team win a championship that had won, you know, that had won 2 years before, that it was finished 500 the year before that. And I think humiliation is something I always put with Pedro, that he just couldn't accept the fact that this was his fate as a manager after waiting 25 years as a baseball guy and a coach to get this job.
Yeah, and there's been a lot that has come out on the inside, you know, inside the clubhouse, you know, pun intended here, of the White Sox the last couple of years from The Athletic. We saw an ESPN piece. Some of that stuff we've known, some of that stuff was a little bit more detailed. And, you know, at the end of the day, there are a lot of fans talking about what Jerry Reinsdorf's going to do, what Jerry Reinsdorf's going to say, how are they going to get out of this? And Mike in Glencoe, he's on the line, and he wants to know, what will Jerry say? Will there be a season-ending presser? He said he'll wait to hold his thoughts until the end of the year. Let's hear from Mike.
Bruce, I'm very good morning, fellas. I'm very interested in what you perceive to be the likely message from Mr. Reinsdorf. I think all we have right now is hope. There's so much anticipation for what he might say. What would your bet be? Are we going to be surprised pleasantly or unpleasantly by Mr. Reinsdorf's remarks?
Well, you know, I don't know, and thanks, Mike, for the call. Thanks all year for being a participant as a caller and a avid listener and a great Chicago baseball fan. I don't know what you can say to make people feel any better, right? Right. You're going to come out and you're going to talk about, we're trying to get better. We'll try to reinforce what we're doing with Chris Getz at the top, you know, as our general manager. We will try to support him. We are going to, you know, we've hired new people in different departments. We fired our Dominican Republic top baseball person. We've hired a new one. We have a young, energetic front office that is moving forward. I think all that is true, but, you know, I don't think you're going to placate fans at this point. The proof is in the pudding. You know, Chicago is Missouri right now. It's going to be the show-me state. It's going to be the show-me city. You're going to have to show Sox fans a reason to come back. The lowest White Sox attendance since 1999, 1.3 million fans. And, you know, again, they've made the first step toward that by deducting 10% automatically across the board on tickets next year. I'm sure most fans and most people will say that's not enough, but it's, you know, it's the first olive branch working toward next year. I hope Sox Fest is another situation where they continue to come back with that. It hasn't been around for a number of years now, and I think that would be a way to start moving forward again by having that for the White Sox fans in 2025.
At the end of the day, the product on the field, though, you know, it's great that they have a young front office, an energetic front office. They do have some stuff. I mean, we have a Southern League championship from the Birmingham Barons. Kannapolis was in the title game, I believe. So they have stuff in the pipeline, but nothing where somebody can actually tangibly say, like, oh, here's our lineup for the next, you know, 4 to 5 seasons. Now, we don't know what some of those guys are going to look like, and we certainly have, you know, some fans on the line here that we're going to hear from. I mean, I look at the Tigers, you know, they were 4 games under 500 when they came in, when they were 62-66, and they came in to play a series at Guaranteed Rate Field. They have 39 wins in the second half. The White Sox have 39 for the season. That's just mind-boggling how far apart these two teams are, and you're seeing A.J. Hinch hug a young, like, there's an exciting team, and it's like, this is what the White Sox, you know, we thought the White Sox might be. I want to hear from Kevin in Palatine. I think he's fed up, it sounds like. He wants to know why do the players, what do their opinions matter? So Kevin from Palatine, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, that's my question. You're hearing, Luis Roberts from John Schifrin's telling him he's a leader and he wants the manager back, and Garrett Crochet, the four-inning pitcher, he wants the manager back, and Gavin Sheets, and, the Jeff Tassin wrote that article. They've never seen a happier team full of losers. Like, why does anyone care what any of these players? Guys, this is the worst team in the history of sports. The only team worse than this is the team that used to lose to the Globetrotters. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, why does anyone care when anyone thinks? And to that caller who just called in, who said, do you think Jerry Reinsdorf, and Bruce, I know you're friends with him, but just hear me out. Anyone that thinks this guy has anything to say, guys, this guy had the worst team in the history of sports, and he put on his leather jacket, and he went down to Springfield and demanded $500 million when he's been, he's been off the state's, for years. So Ryan, like, ask that question. Why does anyone care what anyone on this team thinks? Because, you know, and Ryan, you might know this, because I know you had it with Eloy. A lot of people think Luis Robert has a lot of Eloy in him, too, when it comes to rehabbing, the guy has not made one. He has not made one adjustment at the plate in 3 years. But everyone you hear on this station all day, oh, he's a top five player in the league. Not a top 50 player in the league right now. So I just want to know, why do we care what these players think when they are on the worst team in the history of sports? They should have no voice and hiring a Navy SEAL to be in charge of this team. Like, this team is a joke up and down, and I do not want to hear all offseason, oh, well, you know, Colson Montgomery's coming. Colson Montgomery sucks this year. I don't want to hear any of this nonsense.
All right, Kevin, a lot there, my man. I get it, Bruce. There's a lot of fans that feel like Kevin, and I have a couple thoughts on Luis Robert, but I understand the frustration. Some people don't even want to hear from Jerry. I get it.
Well, one thing is for sure, Inside the Clubhouse will continue to be your sounding place for your frustrations, for whether you feel good or bad about your teams. We're here every Saturday all winter long. We will be with you. When you've had enough football and you get the best coverage in the world here on The Score, Monday through Sunday. But when you need a timeout and you need to go back to baseball, we'll be here for you every Saturday from 9 to 11. Now, getting back to the caller and his frustration, I love his passion, okay? Mm-hmm. That's a passionate White Sox fan. He's had enough. It's not like if you're a White Sox fan, Ryan, that you can become a Cub fan overnight, okay? That's never going to happen, okay? You might be rooting for another National League team or somebody that's playing the Cubs, but in general, you know, I still live in the world of if you're a Sox fan or a Cub fan, you ain't rooting for that other team, okay?
Right.
You might have, you know, you might watch the team. I remember last year hearing from White Sox fans talking about how it was a pleasure to watch the Cubs play baseball last year because they played a good brand of ball for a lot of the year. I get that. But the passion from White Sox fans and the pain is evident in that caller.
They feel cheated, Bruce. They do. They feel cheated because White Sox fans all bought into the rebuild the first time around. And the farm system was replenished, and they signed these guys that they thought were going to be part of a core. They never truly added that big nine-figure player to support it. But you feel cheated when you go through those the first 100-loss season in 2018, and then you get to – it's time to win. The window opens. You spend bad money on Yasmani Grandal and Dallas Keuchel. They win two playoff games in the entire – rebuild window, and now you're the worst team in the history of the game 3 years after you won a division title. It's mind-boggling, honestly. Well, did we get here?
Do you give Jerry Reinsdorf any credit for moving out two of his most valued employees in Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn and saying, okay, this hasn't worked, this is blown up, we're starting over? Do you give him any credit for that?
Well, he didn't really, but and then in all fairness to Chris Getz, he 9 days later kept it insular. He didn't go outside the organization.
Yeah, but Chris Getz has not.
That's no, I know.
The point.
And that
every
well,
hire
I,
that he's made is every I important give, role on the team is somebody from outside the Chicago White Sox organization. Something they hadn't really done at a high level since they hired Chris Getz away from Kansas City about 8 years ago, 7 years ago. So with that in mind, you know, again, is this going to make White Sox fans happy to hear they're hiring the best and the youngest people for the front office outside of the White Sox for the first time? No, not until you see results. I understand that.
Yeah, I do agree with you that I give Chris Getz more credit.
Are you drinking this early in the morning?
I am. Well,
I mean, I know you're a Sox fan.
Clear stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Hawk would approve. Okay.
So. All right. Well, I mean, I know you're a Sox fan, so I would understand.
I just kept it going after last night's loss, Bruce. Some are celebrating and some are, you know, White Sox fans. So we do have Pete Crow Armstrong, the Cubs' great young center fielder, coming up at the bottom of the hour. And before we do, before we go to the Cubs talk real quick, Bruce, I did want to chime in on the Luis Robert. I don't disagree with Kevin from Palatine. I do think there's a little bit of I don't want to say a little bit of a loy, but I do think Luis Robert is not playing to the potential of his tools. The five, I get it. He's not a top 10 player. He has top 10 potential. It's up to him to reach it. He needs to be better about staying on the field. He needs to be better about chase rate. You know, he had an at-bat, his last at-bat.
Did he not hit 38 home runs 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah. And so, and Yoán Moncada got MVP votes 5 years ago. So what?
I mean, that's a little closer to reality. Yes, last year as opposed to 2019.
It's almost an outlier at this point, though, when you look at the back of his baseball card. That's the way I look at it. I think he played to where he can be. He showed it. But I do think there's some care there. And I would be surprised if the White Sox don't entertain the idea of trading him in the offseason. I do want to discuss something before we have to take a break. The Cubs are also facing a ton of decisions, Bruce, as they hit their 82nd win yesterday and have guaranteed them a winning record. But Cub fans don't want to hear that either. And they have a big option sitting in front of them and that they have no decision in. Cody Bellinger is going to take a look at opting out of his contract. And some Cub fans may like that. And some may be like, didn't we just go through this a year ago? He has a 3-year, $80 million contract with opt-outs in each of the first 2 years. And he spoke about the decision that he has in front of him.
I think, definitely going to sit down with the wife when we get some downtime. I haven't really had the time to even think about it. Just because, I mean, it's in the back of your head, right? But at the same time, there's no, like, legitimate thought about what you're going to do because you have to wake up and compete. And my only goal and my only focus is getting on the field and playing. And so, for me, that takes up, you know, so much of my time and my thoughts that I haven't really thought about what I'm actually going to do yet.
I would say, Ryan, he can pick door number one or door number two. He has $30 million coming next year. Yep. He can come back. Or the carrot would be if Juan Soto signs with either the New York Yankees or the New York Mets, do they step away from the Cub contract and say, okay, one of these teams is going to need a left-handed hitter, a guy that can play three outfield positions at Gold Glove level, first base at a Gold Glove level. Is he our guy when we miss out on paying $600 million to Juan Soto?
Yeah, well, I don't think he's got a big decision to make because the question is, can he get $30 million and can he make more money and guaranteed money at a longer term for one of these teams that miss out on Juan Soto? So I don't know. It's a big decision looming for Cody Bellinger that's going to severely impact what the Cubs do going forward in the offseason. And speaking of the Cubs, we have to take a break here on Inside the Clubhouse because we have Pete Crow Armstrong coming up at the bottom of the hour. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste because you know all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Here's a drive to left. Going back. Jones, near the wall. That ball is going to be gone. It's a home run for Pete Crow Armstrong. Opposite field. Listen to these Cub fans.
Pete Crow Armstrong, that's his 10th home run of the season. He got to the 10 mark in Colorado. This is Inside the Clubhouse. I am Ryan McGuffey alongside Bruce Levine. And it's time now to go to the guest hotline, where all guests appear on the Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports books. And Bruce, this is one of the great, young, exciting players on both sides of town.
We welcome Pete Crow Armstrong to Inside the Clubhouse for another appearance on our show. And Pete, the last show for us during the regular season, we continue to go on in the postseason. For you, looking back at your season, what stands out the most? I know you still have a couple games to play, and you're not in that mode yet. But when asked about that, tomorrow as the season wraps up. What do you think your thoughts might be about how the season has gone for you and your teammates?
Well, first of all, thanks for always getting me back on here. It's always very fun talking to you guys. But you kind of touched on it when you said that you might not be in that mode yet, and you know, I don't think. I think that's valid. I think that's kind of the mindset I still have. You know, I think we're at the point in the year where we've come so far, and I think it's our job, it's our obligation, and it's what we signed up for to just, you know, finish out the next two, and then, you know, we evaluate and you know, reassess and everything once game 162 is done. But I mean, this has just been a team that's been a consistent team in terms of, you know, the work and the process and showing up to the field and getting stuff done. And, you know, I think on the topic of that mindset, though, you know, you go watch J-Mo pitch yesterday or the way that Miggy's just continued to call games and perform on both sides of the ball. You know, I think that's just a good representation of, you know, what this team's capable of, one, and two, like, that when it gets to the long parts of the season and you know, the later parts of the season, then that's where we want to play, and we still want to be playing at this time of the year. But, you know, we still got J-Mo, who's going to go seven shutty, you know, throwing balls on the ground. We're going to have Miggy catching these games, and you know, our defense has probably stood out to me the most this year from a baseline perspective, you know, without going into too much detail. We've just been, I think, if we're talking consistency, you know, I think you think of defense when you think about the 2024 Cubbies.
Hey, Pete, I mean, you're one of those guys, regardless of whether I'm watching the Cubs, the White Sox, When you're up to the plate, or when you're playing, when you're chasing the ball down in the gap, you're just kind of stop and watch for me right now. You have a lot of energy. You're only 22. I think it's hard for some people to realize that sometimes. And in the second half, I feel like just watching you, you've just become a more comfortable, complete player, and that's probably because of reps, right? I mean, you had a cup of coffee last year to get that taste. You were trying to find your footing in the first half. And the second half, you've just been a different player. You've been one of those, you know, kind of what you see is what you get, energy guys, both on the field and at the plate. Do you feel that? Do you feel like the second half that you've kind of come into your own, that you're an everyday guy, that you know what to expect when you get to the ballpark every day?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate all that. I think that's just kind of the one thing I was waiting on was the, you know, the experience under my belt. You know, the batter pitcher matchup history, you know, for me defensively, getting to see enough of certain teams, you know, like Cincy, and kind of figure out how to play them throughout the year. And you know, yeah, it's no secret. The numbers show that I've been better. But, you know, I think I'm proud of myself for the continued pursuit of a proper mindset. 'Cause that's helped me more than anything. But, I mean, yeah, I think through the experience, through the failure, through the hard stuff, the struggle, you know, I've definitely come out on the other side, you know, with a much broader, vaster set of knowledge and just understanding for how the game works up here, you know.
Pete, we've seen the improvement. You've talked about it. Ryan asked you about it. We've all seen the improvement in your game. That's the physical part. I want to talk about the mental skills part of the game and how that has changed for you. I've seen an evolution in you from last year, even before that, to this year, where there is a calmness about your game, a belief in yourself that is allowing you to save a lot of your energy for the games. How do you get to that point where you have pent-up energy like a lot of players do, and you focus that energy to be able to have that available to you during a ball game?
I mean, I just feel like I the turning point in terms of any change we saw offensively was like it's all been gaining understanding is just to like how to approach your day and set yourself up well to play a good nine innings, because we spend so much time at the field every day doing work, you know, working on our swing, searching for feels. You know, we're out here all the time with Moda or with Willie, you know, defensively, and there's just a lot of work that's done every day. And in a game where the success is, it's definitely not greater than the failure that you see, you know. I think it's important to never lose sight of the fact that your routine, if it's a good routine that day, if you take some good swings in the cage and you feel great, the chances of you going 0 for 4 are still the same if you felt amazing in your pregame work and in your routine. And I think once I was able to kind of separate pregame from the nine innings we actually play, and, you know, trust that the work is just the work. The work is just what sets you up to succeed tomorrow. You know, it's not these 3-4 to 50 swings that I took in the cage today that's going to help me go 4 for 4. It's the accumulated version of all of my routine and all of the swings I've taken this year. And you know, the constant focus on just trying to be better and being able to do it with, you know, a good group of guys and a group of guys that they all bust their ass. I'm sorry, but it's trusting that the process is just the process, and all you're doing is piling up and accumulating work, and that just contributes to I think, at least personally, how I've carried myself and being able to go perform, you know, and separate. So
when you're a Chicago Cub, there's expectations that you guys know and feel going into spring training that it's, you know, it postseason or bust. What have you learned about being in a race that you guys were in, you know, certainly here in the second half? And then how much are you motivated by coming up short in 2024?
I mean, I'm sure the playoffs is, you know, in its own right, a beast. You know, I got a little taste of the playoff race last year, but I don't know if I really learned anything from the race. You know, I think every day is about going out and winning ball games, and obviously you pile up the wins and your record stands tall, then you have a better chance of making the playoffs than if, you know, if there's more L's in your win-loss column. But, I mean, I don't know. It definitely makes me hungry. Doesn't feel good being left out. Doesn't feel good going to Philly when, you know, when all they're trying to do is get home field advantage and have, you know, that first round, whatever. I don't even really know how it works, but it's tough going and playing those guys when they still got a lot of season looking at them, and you're kind of watching them celebrate and all that stuff. And, you know, that's what we're here to do. You know, counts expects that of us, but I think everybody kind of holds each other accountable on that end. But, you know, I mean, the run that we went on for a little while too was really good. And thus, I guess that's the kind of push you got to make to try and see yourself in October and November. But, I don't know. This team is real close to being able to do it. You know, I think that when the Cubbies find themselves in this same situation next year, you know, the execution will be there. And I mean, if we bring a lot of the same guys back, hopefully we do, then everybody's going to be prepared because we spend enough time with each other. And, you know, we're at that point in next year, I mean, we'll have, we've all gotten to know each other a little bit better, gotten closer, and that's just becoming more of a unit.
Pete Crow Armstrong joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. He's McGuffey. I'm Levine. We're here with you every Saturday talking baseball 52 weeks out of the year. And Pete, here's a question that you can't answer, but I'd like your thoughts on it anyway. And that is, half the year, people have been saying, why isn't Council leading off Pete Crow Armstrong now? Okay, he's a weapon. He's he's going to be a dynamic force in baseball. He's already proving it. Why doesn't he move him up? I know the answer. People don't want to hear what I have to say. I'd rather hear you talk about controlling what you can control and the rest leaving it up to Council. But the fact is, most people believe at some point you're going to be an impactful leadoff man. Your thoughts?
My thoughts, you'll definitely have to talk to Count about getting an answer there. But I'll tell you my answer. My answer that I think this is probably the best answer you could get is you haven't seen me leading off because Ian Happ has been on an absolute tear since, and this may be wrong date-wise, but since July 4th is when I feel like he took over and became the leadoff hitter of this team. Like, that was, you know, that was the role that he's fallen into, and he's again, he has been a killer. I don't know why you'd want to ever change that up, especially if we're talking about the playoff race. Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? Ian's...
Right.
I don't even want to know what Ian's contact rate was on the first pitch of the game or hard hit ball rate because it was ridiculous, and he was just... I feel like he embraced that role himself, but he did it in his own way. You know, he had a clear plan of attack, and he has stayed on that path all year. So, like, I think him moving to the leadoff spot, him being able to stick there for us and produce. I mean, because it feels like when Ian was up there. In the first inning, we had a really good chance of putting at least one on the board in the first, and that's huge. And then if we're going to talk about me in this at all, it's like I've let off my whole life, you know. I've let off my whole entire life on such a different level of baseball. I don't know who I am as a leadoff hitter in the big leagues yet. But when that time comes, I'm going to, you know, it's, I don't know how I approach it, but I, you know, I'm looking forward to that day whenever that comes. But for now, that's Ian's spot to finish the year in and keep doing what Ian Happ's been doing since he started his tear.
Are you one of those players, excuse me, are you one of those players defensively that believes there's no ball you can't get to and then, you know, specifically, I'm thinking about the Dodgers catch, you know, to win the game. But is there a time or a moment or something like that catch even, where you surprise yourself sometimes?
Honestly, I feel like this year, more times than not, I feel like I've actually come up short on some balls that I could have caught that I didn't catch, that I thought I could catch that I didn't catch. Sorry, I don't know if the wind's getting kind of loud on us here, but...
You're good. You're all good.
I'm standing in center field right now. I feel like that's the proper way to have an aggressive mindset as a center fielder. You know, it is your ball until it's not, and, you know, it's your job to catch it if it's going to hit the grass. But, you got to have that delusional type of outlook on it where you don't know what the ball looks like hitting the green grass, and if it does, you're not too happy with it. But I don't feel like I've surprised myself with any plays. You know, I think the weird type of catches, like the weird stab in Dodger Stadium, the sliding catch in Dodger Stadium, just anything like that, you know, I've practiced. I've caught a ball at my ankles. I've caught a ball at my butt behind me. Like, it's just all stuff that I've practiced and I'm ready for. And if the situation calls on it, then, you know, like I said, then I'm ready. But No, I don't think I've surprised myself with any plays that I've made this year. I think I've been surprised with the amount of times I've actually come up short.
In closing with you, and Ryan and I really appreciate your time, and Pete all year long, just thank you so much for being, you know, the gentleman and the professional that you are. It's been a joy covering you and your teammates.
Thanks.
When you look at, you are arguably the most exciting Cub player since Javier Baez, okay? Do you feel the fan base excitement when you are out there making catches, making throws, getting bunt hits, singles, striking out, walking? How palatable is that for you to sense that enjoyment from the crowd?
I mean, that was what I thought Wrigley was going to be like. I've come to games here as a fan. I don't know. There's just a beautiful air about this place. You know, I think it's kind of cool and kind of funny when, you know, it's the inning change and everybody's kind of up and it feels like social hour, and seems like everybody wants to be here, you know, for their own reasons, just like we want to be here every day. And I mean, it makes us sick that we don't get to bring some back to the city this year. But you know, the way that I've been able to interact with fans, whether it's on deck or before the game or during the game in the bleachers, like they've made my time here very enjoyable. And they give me something to look forward to every day. You know, I think being able to take expectations on yourself, honestly, and make them a little external in terms of like, hey, you know, don't put too much pressure on you today to do it for you. Maybe do it for the 40,000 coming to watch, or obviously, you know, I'm doing it for my other 8 to 12 guys on the side of the ball with me. But I mean, getting to interact with fans at Wrigley and getting to really feel, you know, their love for not only the city but just Chicago Cub baseball specifically is a beautiful thing. And we show up to the park every day in hopes to make everybody's day here.
Well, Pete, keep being you, because I agree with Bruce. You are the most exciting Cubs player to watch since Javi Baez. And health and happiness this offseason. Come back strong, and we look forward to talking you down the line.
Yes, y'all too. I appreciate you both.
Pete Crow Armstrong. He's had a heck of a year, especially in the second half, Bruce. And today the Cubs continue their final series of the season when they host the Reds at Wrigley Field. Pregame coverage starts at 12:45 with first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. White Sox and interim manager Grady Sizemore joins us at the top of the hour. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.